Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to
take a stand. Take a stand. Live off the record with Shivago Lang is sponsored by Advantage Insurance, the Cleveland Clinic, Fidelity Bank Bahamas, the Fincastle Media Group, Royal Fidelity Bank and Trust, Raw Star Assurance, and Scotiabank.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. I trust that you are doing well. If you want to give us a call at all today on the show, the numbers to do so are 323-6232, that's 323-6232, or 325-4316, 325-4316. You can also call us on 325-4259, that's 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796, that's 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are, of course, live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow channel 612. That's BTC Flow channel 612. So let me give it a lay of the land, folks, because I know some of y'all are excited. And there are lots of things happening today, but I do have some very special guests that I'm going to be speaking to the first minutes of the show, and then I want to take up some issues related to $4 million, all right? So you stay tuned and we'll get there. But I want you to know that RF has coming up very soon. Bahamas Economic Outlook. It's going to be taking place at the Grand Hyatt Convention Center, Bahama. If you want to register for that, you'll have to do so at www.rfeoc.com. That's rfeoc.com. There's a cost of $400 in person, and then $150 online. The early bird rate is $360 in person, and that's available through May 15th. There are group discounts, groups of 10 or more. And I can tell you that I have had the privilege of participating in the economic outlook of RAF in the past. The caliber of presenters is just, to me, outstanding. They come with substantive, relevant discussions about the issues that are being dealt with at the conference. And this year, I expect different. And I have actually two of those presenters with us today to give us a sneak preview on what they will be dealing with at the conference. Welcome, Mr. Keith Herman and Mr. Manuel Tomas. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you very much. Good afternoon to you all.
No, it's our pleasure. Our pleasure to have you with us today. And I imagine you're looking forward to presenting at the conference.
Yes, actually, it's an honor to present educational information on various topics. So yeah, it's exciting and a great venue as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you, Mr. Tomas, I want to pronounce it properly, right? Manuel Tomas.
Yes.
Yes. And Herman, Keith Herman, I got you. And Mr. Tomas, you're going to be presenting on what topic in the grand scheme of all this technological advancement, digital movement taking place across the globe and its implications for the Bahamas?
Yes, I mean, I'm gonna focus this talk more on the challenges that the world and the region, the Caribbean region, faces as regards to the water provision to be able to tackle with all the challenges that we see arising from climate change, from water contamination. The cities that have more and more people. So all these challenges and how the water industry leaders can tackle all of this and basically be able to create the proper environment for economical development, as we all know, without a proven potable water source, there is no economical development that's possible. So basically, that's what I'm going to address today during this talk.
You know, I had an institute at the University of the Bahamas, and we have another institute there that is dealing with climate change resiliency. So the perspective of the University of the Bahamas is we're not in a debate about climate change and its existential implications for us. We are in a climate change environment in which countries like the Bahamas have to be resilient. And from just listening to you very briefly, I gather that you see the existential threat and are suggesting there are things that really have to be done in addressing it, right?
Oh, that is very true. And the consequences of this, we can already see them in the way countries and islands like these Caribbean islands are looking at how to be able to a reliable source of potable water. So we all know that there are a number of ways that utilities across the region can really deal with this. And if you allow me, I would just go into what I really wanted to say during this talk.
Please.
Yeah. So I think that the most immediate challenge is really to reduce water losses. So we know that across the region, and not only the Caribbean region, I would say that it's basically a worldwide issue. There are places where you spend producing potable water, but in the end, that water does not get to the final consumer because it just leaks through the cracks of the pipes. And that is a total waste, and that can be managed. There are ways to manage it. Consolidated Water, which basically I'm representing, has a proven track record of optimizing water losses. And that is definitely something that all utilities across the world need to see, because this is a limit. It's just a waste that we let it leak through the cracks of the pipes. Of course, water reuse is also a major topic that we need to seriously address. There are technologies out there now in the world and in the region that can allow wastewater to be reused, if not for potable water, which probably is a topic that is more for the future, although you see places in the world where you are reusing wastewater for potable usages, at least for irrigation. When you treated it, it can be treated in a way that you may use it for irrigation. And we know that irrigation is a major user of freshwater resources. So the most we can reuse, the better. And of course, then you have desalination. I mean, we all know that ocean is an infinite source of water. Desalination has been with us for a long time now, but since the 80s and early 90s, it became really economically the advent of more energy efficient equipment and energy recovery devices. So desalination is also a drought-proof solution that does not affect our limited freshwater resources. So we see in the Caribbean region, really, desalination as being in some of the islands the only way to produce potable water. And of course, Consolidated Water and all of its subsidiaries are industry leaders in all of these three areas, like water losses optimization and seawater reverse osmosis desalination. So I really think that Consolidated Water is very well placed to help the Caribbean region to tackle all of these challenges through its portfolio of companies. We have wastewater use and treatment plants all across the western region of the United States. We operate, our biggest three desalination plants are located in and we are really ready and eager to be able to help the Bahamian population and economy with more of this operation, desalination operations, to be able to provide the Bahamas with really reliable and good quality and quantity of potable water to allow the economical development of the island. We also operate, of course, in Grand Cayman, where we basically produce 90% of the water that's consumed in Grand Cayman is produced by our desalination plants. And we also operate plants in the British Virgin Islands, Tortola and John Van Dyke. So really, all of this, if you took it together, is how you can really tackle this challenge that the world and the region is facing with climate change aggravating the situation of allowing for the economical development of all these regions by being able of providing a reliable source of potable water without exhausting the freshwater resources that we still have in our land.
And I know we are in this country aware of some of the things that you mentioned, because at one point I think we were losing more than 50% of our water to leakages and that kind of thing. I was minister responsible for finance at the time. We engaged a company out of Israel, I think it was, to do an extensive set of works to try to reduce that. And of course, you know, the issue of the desalination and what it could mean to increasing, improving the water supply continues to be one of those things that represents an opportunity going forward. So thank you very much, Mr. Tomas. Mr. Herman, the whole context of the conference is to explore the developments that have been so disruptive to global economic development over the last 10 years or so. And one of those places or areas where that disruption has taken place has been in the area of technology and innovation. And you are one of the experts in that, having founded yourself IPA Equities. You're a serial entrepreneur, an advocate for disruptive and innovative blockchain technologies. My understanding is that you've raised over $500 million in venture funding, representing more than 200 technology companies and over the years. And so this is a space in which you are operating and have operated. So I imagine yours is going to be one of those additionally interesting talks that people will be looking for.
Well, after hearing the Manuel's topic, I'm fascinated by what he's talking about. So I think it should be a very interesting, the two diverse topics, but very interesting, because obviously the future is something that we have to look forward to, and we need to plan and look at opportunities and things that we need to address. So digital currency is one of those areas, digital currency and digital assets that has been developing, and the opportunities have expanded, and it's a very exciting time. There's a lot of unique ways to invest, and we can explore all of that at the conference, but I feel that it's important that people really understand what this is all about, so they have an opportunity to still participate early on in this movement. And, you know, hopefully, you know, reap the benefits like we've seen through many other cycles. There'll be, you know, more cycles to come that will involve digital currencies and digital assets.
Can I ask you, you know, we have a limited time, but can I ask you, like, there's a lot of enthusiasm around digital currencies. I mean, a lot of enthusiasm. My own impression is that there are pockets of people who clearly understand, technically speaking, what is going on, but there are lots of people who just are buying into the enthusiasm. But what is it that you think is driving this enthusiasm at the level of the people who know?
The majority of the currency is not traded, and the people who understand what the technology is all about buy currency to participate in that particular ecosystem. And generally, that currency is not traded. The currency that you see being traded are more speculators, people who are looking to make a quick buck. And that's why you see a lot of volatility, but that represents a small portion of all the digital assets. Unfortunately, it's responsible for the large fluctuations.
And that would be consistent with what I've said. I've said to people on my show very often is that a lot of the movement is driven by in just really speculation, and you can make money on speculation if you guess the movement's right, but that doesn't necessarily represent the underlying fundamental value yes. that a thing can offer. Am I wrong on that?
No, you're 100% correct. These people are investing in a trend. You know, they in the stock market, you know, they always say the trend is your friend. And you have people who are jumping into these markets who, like I said, are just looking to make a quick buck. They don't understand the underlying technology. It's equivalent to buying stock without knowing what the company does. Mm-hmm. So they're buying in into these, you know, basically they're charting, you know, the movement of the currency, mm-hmm. and they're trying to jump in and jump out. So when you see there's, you know, some real news, they get very panicked because they don't really understand the true impact. And so they start dumping everything. But the people who are in it for the long term, who understand the value of the underlying technology, are just holding, you know, for the long term.
And your talk at the conference will speak to some of these issues.
Oh, I was going to talk about a completely different topic. I thought I would talk about my experience diving in the Cayman Islands.
No, man, I hear you teasing people, so I want to make sure they know. If you want to know more, you can come and get it at the conference.
Well, they're definitely going to get more at the conference, but yeah, we have to keep it fun at the same time. Absolutely. You know, we don't want... You know, it's something, whenever you talk about innovation and disruption, the learning curve is usually steep at the beginning, mm-hmm. but we try to keep it as simple as possible so that people can, you know, be a part of the movement and be able to take advantage of the opportunities. So yes, there will be plenty more that we will cover, including my scuba diving adventures.
You know, one of the things you mentioned, and I'm really... interested in is, so very often when you have pioneering developments in areas of technology, the people at the helm of that pioneering effort, they're the ones who tend to benefit quite a bit in terms of the economics of it. But you also mentioned that if people understand better what is happening in this digital currency space and other spaces of technological advancement, then you big broader audiences of people could actually in fact benefit. The question that really is, how do you best even put yourself in a position to know, understand what's going on?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've answered that question many times, Once in Silicon Valley in front of VCs, we had this discussion. And, you know, look, it's like anything else. You have to do your homework. I mean, just plain and simple. And, you know, that requires, you know, maybe a little bit more homework. If it's an area that you really don't understand, or maybe you need to reach out to people who have more knowledge in that area. I remember speaking in Silicon Valley to the VCs and telling them that purchasing digital currency is not, you know, they're not buying equity. They're buying into an ecosystem, and they didn't understand that at all. So, you know, that was very early on. Now there are, you know, secured assets that are, you know, that, you know, that you buy tokens and essentially you're getting equity. But, you know, early on, it wasn't that way. So, you know, it's understanding things like this that make a huge difference, right? What are you buying into? You know, what's their roadmap? Where are they headed? What's the use of the currency? There's a lot of different things, and we'll probably cover most during the speech at the conference. So, you know, I think those details will be very helpful to people who are really interested in getting more involved and you know, being able to take advantage of this this new wave of investments.
Mr. Thomas, one of the things that's true about desalination, my understanding is that's heavy energy usage in the process. Is that still the issue? Is the technology more advanced now in creating more energy effective ways of doing the desalination?
That is very true. I mean, it's been a huge development over the last maybe one or two decades with, first of all, with the advent of the energy recovery devices, which basically convert a source of energy that was there and we just had to waste it back in the day. And advancements with pressure exchangers, it's been possible now to take that energy and help with the desalination process. So that really made desalination much, much more affordable. We also see a lot of development and innovation on the membrane technology, even on pumps that are becoming more and more efficient. So I wouldn't say that it's because of the energy cost that you won't have desalination. So it's totally affordable now to have desalination at very affordable prices. Mm-hmm. And we all know that innovation is always there. There are always people out there in the universities, research institutes, even companies that are always searching to that extra mile to get an extra point in efficiency, so that as time goes by, you will see more and more efficient plants that use less and less energy. And now you also see, especially in places where is just there to be taken as for free, you see a lot of projects that are really blended with solar farms. So part of the energy that really consume, it comes just from the sun. So you see more and more of that, especially in the Middle East, where pretty much all the new desalination facilities have a solar farm attached to it. So you'll see, in the next maybe 5-10 years, you will see even more innovation just to make desalination even more affordable. So it's really not because of the cost of energy or the energy consumption that you don't have desalination as a drought-proof technology to be able to provide countries, cities, regions with a reliable source of potable water.
But Mr. Herman, a country like the Bahamas, small country by any standard, is trying to put itself in that space, the emerging digital technology wave is something it can build another viable, robust industry around. But I heard you mention something that I heard many experts in the field mention, that I'm not entirely sure altogether those of us who are trying to promote this get, which is that this is an area where an ecosystem matters. Not merely some interest in one particular something or the other, but an ecosystem matter. Can you help us understand that a little better, please?
Sure. In the world of technology, we have a lot of decentralization. And what I mean by that is we have people working all over the world on problems in different areas. So this is an example of utilizing the global community to help solve a more of a regional problem. And it takes a lot. I mean, the issue you're talking about, it requires a lot of people in terms of developing technology and implementing it and having an ecosystem where people are supporting it to make sure that it's not just a fad and it just disappears.
So am I correct to say that, for instance, a country like the Bahamas has to recognize that, okay, let's understand the parts of the ecosystem that's required, and then understand that the idea is attracting those parts of it to yourself, either operating virtually or from within the space, so that the people who need to get things done in it can access all the parts. Am I right on that?
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's the days of operating in your office are, I think we all agree, especially after COVID, are pretty much over. Mm-hmm. If you really want to get anything done, you have to work with people. You have to collaborate. You have to draw in experts, people that have not a greater knowledge than yourself to create something greater than yourself. And so that's where ecosystems have become become recognized, and the importance of them recognized. And especially you'll see that in digital currency and mass adoption. People are buying these currencies, and in order for them to really succeed, they need to have utility, which is one thing, but there also has to be mass adoption so that there's a supply and a demand, to support that ecosystem. So ecosystems are very important, not only in the world of digital currency, but, innovation anywhere or disruption. The ecosystems are the ones that are supporting it and allowing them to spend. I think more people would be very beneficial if more people were more aware of that fact.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, June 8th, 2022, RF's business Bahamas Economic Outlook Conference is going to take place where? At the Grand Hyatt Convention Center, Bahama. If your preference is in person, there's availability for that. If your preference is online, there's availability for that. And you can register singly or as a group on www.rfeoc.com with all of these brilliant speakers you've heard today, in addition to people like Dex Tariq, Executive Communications Manager at Facebook and Google. Of course, Keith Herman, Disruptive Technology and Innovation Expert, presenting on the future of investments, geopolitical impacts on the Sitalides, geopolitical and geoeconomic strategist. And of course, you have Mr. Keith Herman of Consolidated, who's also going to be presenting, along with Sean Kanungo on global innovation strategies. As a matter of fact, he's presenting on the metaverse and related emerging disruptive innovation. So that's, like I said, always quality offerings, always quality presenters, and always a substantive dynamic discussion at RF's Global Bahamas economic outlook. Mr. Herman, Mr. Tomas, any final words?
I mean, my final word is really tell everybody that we really need to care for our precious resource, which is water. It's not just governments or utilities. Everyone has a role to play. We as a industry leader, we can do our part, and we are doing our part, and we hope to do even more of our part, but everybody needs to help. Everybody has to utilize this resource really, the better way, without wasting water, so that all in all, I mean, as like I always say, economical development, any sorts of development, it's not possible if you're not able to provide a reliable source of potable water to regions, cities, or countries. So everybody, do your part. We will also certainly do our part as well.
All right, Mr. Herman.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. It's been an honor, and I look forward to sharing more information with your audience.
All right. Thank you so very much.
Hello, Shivago.
David. Hi. Yes, hi.
David Slatter here with RF. I'm going to jump in, and it'll be my first and final word.
I don't even see you showing up on my screen.
Sorry about that, but I'm actually sitting in the 96.9 office room.
Oh, my word, man. Forgive me. I'm so sorry.
No problem. No problem.
Listen, go right ahead and talk, man. Thank you so much for showing up. I was wondering. I said, did David Doe send these gentlemen without somebody?
Well, you know, this is one of the issues with virtual meetings is you're not quite sure who's there, right? So
that's right, right? If you're here, you're right ahead, man.
Well,
make sure you tell us what we may have missed.
Well, you did a great job of talking about the event and when it is, where it is, why you should join, at least online, if not in person. Remember now, there's nothing like being in person to network and communicate, so keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to add to what Manuel Tomas said about with consolidated water and water. As you know, but many people may not know, is consolidated water is listed on the local stock exchange as well. So, and consolidated water is the main supply of water to water and sewage. As I was coming to work this morning, traffic was delayed. Sewage, I think, shoring up their distribution network, so that'll be good, less wastage. So if you want to actually own shares of consolidated water, you can do it in the local market. And just one little point I was going to add, Mr. Herman talked about digital currencies and the like. As an investment analyst, you know, I've been trying to rack my brain about how one determines the value of a cryptocurrency, for example. And he mentioned two words, utility. And as an economist, we love, Shivago, you and I love utility curves and indifference curves and those things. So Does it have utility, and will it be adopted? And To what extent it'll be adopted and when? So the current value today is a function of utility and level of adoption in the future and when, and you discount back to the present. If you don't understand the technology that underlies the given cryptocurrency, for example, or security token or stablecoin or coin or non-fungible token, then you can't come up with an assessment of value. So Unless you're able to do that, as you mentioned, people are being very speculative at the moment. So until you become tested, you may want to be a little wary about jumping into the cryptocurrency market at this time.
Or as an alternative, I always tell people who call my show asking me for investment advice, listen, I know some very good people who can give you investment advice so that if you don't understand it, it's their business to understand it, so right. You can go through them. So RF is one of those.
So join us at the conference so you can listen, Mr. Herman, give you information about the underlying technology, and therefore you can make a better decision on whether or not to invest.
Absolutely. All right. So June 8th, right?
Correct.
Starts at 10 a.m. I'm told.
Registration starts at 9, so there'll be some snacks and coffee. Come there early, have a little early breakfast or late breakfast, depending on when you start. Do some chatting, some networking, and then enjoy the rest of the conference. And then network as you can during the breaks, during lunch, and afterwards.
Excellent, excellent. Well, again, RF, thank you very much for joining us to share the information. We wish you every success at the quality conference, because it has been all the other times I've ever had anything to do with it. And from the speakers we've had today and the ones I see on your listing, what else can you expect?
Fully agree.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z-Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. When we come back, we will continue our discussions. We'll be back after this break. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Imagine driving your dream car, doing all the things you never thought you could, like perfecting your parallel parking skills or picking up your date. Everyone loves to dream. Stop dreaming. Start driving with a brand new offer from Scotiabank. With an auto loan from Scotiabank, benefit from no payments for up to 2 months, a low interest rate up to 9 years to repay, and first year up to 2.5% of the loan amount. Promotion ends June 30th, 2022. Stop dreaming and start driving today with an auto loan from Scotiabank.
Around the world, Cleveland Clinic is recognized as a leader in healthcare. Our team of experts relentlessly pursues the best for our patients. From groundbreaking cancer research to state-of-the-art heart surgery, life-saving innovations happen here every day. When it's time to travel for your health, it's time to travel to Cleveland Clinic, your destination for care, for every care in the world. To learn more, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Sheila, you okay? I see smoke coming from your window.
Chad, Johnny Moe's burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pull my phone out, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA rep. Sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that.
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Know how important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches. Fidelity, we're good for you.
Join us on June 8th for the annual RF Economic Outlook Conference, where speakers include Dex Torok, executive at Facebook and Google, John Citaletis, U.S. Department of State, Keith Herman, serial tech entrepreneur and blockchain expert, and global innovation strategist, Sean Canungo. Registration is now open. Find out more at rfeoc.com.
For 25 years, Advantage Insurance has provided coverage for your most prized possessions, offering insurance plans to cover your vehicle, home, business, and boat with customized options that work with your budget. Now, Advantage says thank you to all our loyal customers and business partners over the past 25 years. Call 356-0285 or visit Advantage Insurance on Collins Avenue today. When every dollar counts, count on Advantage. Celebrating 25 years of service.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together, whatever weather, cold or warm.
Hmm. back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. So glad you could join us. If you want to give us a call at some point, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. My understanding is that for some reason, Guardian isn't on 969. So my mother isn't listening to the show that day. I don't know what's going on, but that's what I'm told. I don't know whether there's some issue or the other. But otherwise, there's BTC Flow Channel 612. So, you know, very often people call me, read something, a headline or the other, and when I hear it or read it, I immediately think, nah, I don't know about that. So when I saw this headline about the $4 million overpayment to finance officers by finance officers, I said to myself, wait a minute, come on, man, what? As I read the story, this is a story this is a story in the Nassau Guardian. No pun, I guess it's the editor then. And the story says an internal audit, in quote, was conducted and there was some gaps in the controls when it comes to the finance officers. This is Minister of State for Public Service, Pia Glover Rule, making that comment. And she told this to reporters outside cabinet. Now, I'm quite sure it's like, was this prompted? Like, did a reporter ask this without any context? Or was this offered? Like how do you get to a story about $4 million in overpayment to finance officers? Like, a reporter actually just walks up to you and say that, or is this how did that happen? I didn't see that particular context provided, so I'm not sure. So this is Minister Glover Rule being quoted here in this story, says, what has happened is those finance officers have adjusted the system to ensure that their pay rates were increased based on an approval that they have gotten and that we have not in the public service had any vision of. Okay, I'm gonna read it for you slow, folk, right? What has happened is Minister Glover Rule is those finance officers, okay? All of them, some of them, who? Those finance officers have adjusted the system to ensure that their pay rates were increased on an approval that they have gotten and that we have not in the public service had any vision on. So basically, this is her continuing, normal government procedure in terms of adjusting the pay scales was not observed. Continuing on, this resulted in an overpayment of $4 million plus by the same scale of employees where the system would have been adjusted in their favor without the proper government procedures. Oh, wow. Oh, man. Folk, okay. So I'm gonna try this down for you when we come back from news breakers. There's a whole lot of lessons up in here. A whole lot of lessons. I like what I would say up front is that how something as material as this could be spoken about as a side discussion with journalists in the front of the cabinet office is startling. absolutely startling. Okay, I would be shocked if the minister or Ministry of Finance does not soon come and clarify this matter. I would be stunned that did not, because that's just, it's astounding, astounding. Because if you read on the face of it, the suggestion is finance saw something that looked like an approval and took upon themselves to adjust the treasury system to pay themselves what amounted to an overpayment of $4 million. Approved, mind you, but overpayment. Like the contradiction just in that alone is mind-boggling. But let's see if we can't get to the bottom of it. Maybe there's truth on both sides. Okay, maybe there's a way to wade through this all. And we're gonna have to do so when we come back from the news break. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after the news break.
Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. You can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Three, the normal policy of overpayment is recovery. In quote, the audit has revealed some gaps in terms of controls, and the policy is to recover. We have found some things as a result of the audit that were done wrong, and I'm sure consequences will flow. Wow. That's the Minister of State Public Service. Minister Glover Rowe, Pia Glover Rowe. So let's see if we can break this down. How does a salary increase or career path adjustment take place in the government of the Bahamas? That's the first question. This matter, as I understand it, relates to a career path adjustment or approval of an adjusted career path approval that for finance officers. Who are the finance officers? Folks, if you're going to get monies paid in the public service, those invoices and what have you have to be processed in each ministry department through a finance officer. The finance officer doesn't himself or herself make that payment, but they do all the necessary work to have that payment affected by the Treasury, and that includes for their own salary. So a finance officer, let's be clear, because some of you, I'm telling you, you jump to some conclusions on planet Earth that no sensible human being needs to jump to if they have the right information. Now, if you don't have the right information, I can understand, but even then, maybe it's better to ask questions. That's one of the things I love about Juan McCartney. Whenever you're listening to him, very often, he's telling you, you know, I just don't make sense to me. I'm trying to understand it. I don't have all the information. Some of you, oh, they teach the money. Heads should roll. People should go to jail. Let's back the ship up a little bit now. A finance officer cannot pay themselves. And a finance officer cannot adjust the system. Let me say it again. A finance officer cannot adjust the system to pay themselves any money. Cannot do so. All right, the Treasury is to pay up. If there's an adjustment there, it's made in the Treasury system. Okay, that's the first thing. So how do you get a career path adjustment? So in the public service, there are practically every permanent and pensionable position has a career path. So you have a clerk one, clerk two, clerk three, clerk four, five, so forth and so forth, leading up to a certain place until you get to assistant secretary, till you get to first assistant, second assistant secretary, then you get to first assistant secretary, and then you get to deputy permanent secretary, then you get to under secretary, and then you get to permanent secretary. That's on the administrative scale. Within the technical streams, there are other career paths associated with SEAM. If you are in the, you would have heard welfare officers in the Ministry of Social Service complaining about a career path before. You would have heard guidance counselors perhaps complaining about a career path, because what they want is they want a series of progression within their careers that says, I've moved from this scale to that scale to the next scale. And so with every progression, there is an attendant salary, so that at some point you can even max your salary scale, so that you are at the top of your salary scale, meaning in that particular career path, there is no more money to be gotten from any promotion. So the only way to get more money is to be promoted outside of that particular scale into a new scale. And then another set of progressions will take place. That is determined in the first instance by the government of the Bahamas that has executive control and direction of the government. Who's that? The cabinet of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. All right? So if you want to adjust the career path, the minister of the public service, or if it relates to some other ministry, could do so. But the minister of the public service will bring to the cabinet of the Bahamas a recommendation for an adjustment in the career path. We hereby recommend that the career path, the new career path, for FIC based on these qualifications and so forth and so forth and so forth and so forth. That's what has to happen. Sometimes it is attendant with information from finance and those that says, if you make this adjustment to the career path and you start to fit in salaries along the lines of X, Y, and Z, here is what we believe would be the ultimate cost to the government of doing that. And so the government might agree, okay, fine, no problem, we agree to it. But it ain't gonna happen any other way. So if at all you see an adjustment in the salaries of finance officers, be sure be very sure the cabinet of the Bahamas concluded, approved it, and there was a piece of paper attached to that conclusion. That's what you heard the unions pushing out there and waving. Something that pointed to a cabinet conclusion, and they gave the file number for that conclusion. So let's settle something. The career path adjustment of finance officers was approved by the government of the Bahamas, period. Period. Let's be clear on that. The ultimate decision-making authority, the cabinet of the Bahamas, agreed it. That's clear. Okay, so finance officers saw something representing an approval from the cabinet of the Bahamas, and that is as it ought to be. Now, once the cabinet approves it, that's not the end of the deal, though. There is now a procedure to give effect to the cabinet's approval. This is no longer about whether the approval has been gotten. It's been gotten. But there is a procedure in respect to that. Why? The cabinet conveys its approval to relevant permanent secretaries, in which case we're talking about the permanent secretary at the Ministry of Public Service. This isn't a question of whether Donella Bodie or somebody else was there. That's irrelevant. These personalities occupy an office, and the office is called permanent secretary, and nobody ever leaves that office. I mean, by that I mean the office never leaves. Somebody leaves that office and is replaced by somebody else. This is the permanent secretary, whoever it is at the time, the permanent secretary receives the cabinet conclusion saying the cabinet has agreed this new career path for finance officers. Okay, what then happens? Well, in trying to give effect to that conclusion, the Ministry of Public Service, the Department of Public Service, sits down and says, okay, here are the finance officers. Here are the skills in which they now exist. Here is the progression for the new scale that's been approved by the government of the Bahamas. On the basis of that progression, this officer now in, say, accountant one, now slides in two, and therefore has an adjusted salary based on the new scale of an additional $1,500. This person who is now in accountant two now gets slotted in accountant maybe two again, but now with an adjusted salary of an additional $2,000, right? Or based on the incremental progressions, a person going to salaries accountant three has to now go from one progression, two progression into the third progression, and now has a $3,500 adjusted salary based. So they do what is called a progression exercise for each officer so that each officer gets what is appropriate to the progressed new career path that has been determined, so that not everyone gets the same amount of money. That wasn't what was agreed. A career path was agreed. And so that people now get what is consistent with their adjusted career path. Okay? Now, so that is done. That exercise is done. When it is completed, that exercise is then sent to the Public Service Commission and those, and the commission will look it over and approve and agree, okay, yes, this is it. These are what people are there to do and so forth. Then there is forwarded to the Governor General that information so that by order, the Governor General will give effect to, by order, that salary agreed. Remember now, all these people get hired in the public service and the permanent pension of the establishment. Ultimately, all of that stuff, you know, the governor general and them see, you know, and they get gazetted and all that kind of stuff. Right? So this is the, so once the governor general signs that order, now you can send that order to the treasury through the ministry or department of public service. And now with that order, the treasurer has approval to execute payments in accordance with the progression. Okay, so what happened? As far as I'm aware, no one disputes that the cabinet approved the new career path. No one disputes that. What seems to have been discovered in the audit, for whatever reason, Chivago Line does not know, for whatever reason, the progression step necessary at the Ministry of Public Service, which I think is what the minister is alluding to, did not occur. So that an effect to the cabinet approval was given without that necessary step having taken place. Now, ultimately, if that step had taken place, finance officers would have gotten an adjusted salary based on the approval the government gave. There's no question about that. Would they have gotten the same amount individually as they would, as they got? Maybe not, maybe not. But they would have gotten an additional amount based on the new career path adjustment and the progressions that would have followed that. But somehow, for whatever reason, that step wasn't followed. Okay, and so procedurally speaking, there was not that step taken. But what in effect happened was, perhaps using the authority of the cabinet conclusion, the Treasury, let's be clear now, this is nonsense to suggest that finance officers did this. Absolute nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Don't put that on a finance officer. Finance officers cannot pay themselves. They cannot pay themselves. If finance officers could pay themselves in the justice system in half, they would not go, they're striking. They would wake up in the morning, they'd be like, yeah, my salary is straight. The Treasury did this, right? Basically, based on the authority of the cabinet. Now, from all I understand, they ought not to have done so. They ought to have waited for the process that I told you about, where the progression took place at the Ministry of Public Service, and then you got the thing sent to the Governor General, or to the Public Service Commission, and then to the Governor General for that order that became the authority to do so. But if you run, listen, don't none of y'all text my show, don't call my show, running on with no teeth in finance officers and the finance officers teeth this and do that and that thing. Don't do that. Do not. Don't do that because I am not going to tolerate it. Because it would be dead wrong. Now, paid some monies. Now, how much would the progression have ultimately yielded? Would it have been $4 million? Would it have been $5 million? Would it have been $3 million? I really don't know. I could only assume, though, that the Treasury would have calculated that amount based on what the cabinet approved. So is there an overpayment to the extent that the progression might have yielded less monies paid out than was paid? Yes, there could have been an overpayment. Or to the extent that for an individual officer, an amount paid to them was higher than the amount that they would have gotten in the progression, yes, there could have been an overpayment, but we don't know all of that. So was Minister rule suggesting there was an overpayment? I don't know. She could be. Was she correct to say that the finance officers adjusted the system to pay themselves from the information I have? Mm-mm. No, sir, Ebal. Could she have said the Treasury made a determination to execute this these adjustments based on a conclusion of the cabinet? If she had said that, I would have said, okay, well, that seems about right. If she said that, she did say that a procedure was not followed, she's absolutely correct in that regard. What procedure? The progression that is required at the Ministry of Public Service, the Department of Public Service, did not seem to take place, and nor did the ministry or department seem to be aware of the execution of the cabinet's conclusion by the Treasury outside of that progression. And that begs questions. But I can be honest with you, all right? Any alarming questions? Not alarming questions. Listen to me, right? First of all, if I'm running an organization, it's my organization. I can have internal kafoos. I could have internal mess ups. It happens all the time. Not just in the government service. I'm talking about companies say, well, you know what? You all messed this up. Auditors know. Well, listen, the procedure here was not followed. That happens. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it happens. It's my organization. Am I dealing with villains who are trying to steal from me? In this instance, absolutely not. Am I dealing with some eagerness to carry out perhaps a task given by the cabinet of the Bahamas leading up to an election? Maybe. And therefore, heads are going to roll? Really? Heads will roll why? That some discipline might be administered. What is a discipline? Training? An amendment to how things should be done in the future so that we don't have this faux pas no more? Yes, maybe that. But to cast this in that kind of light, I'm sorry. You have to talk to somebody who's less knowledgeable about how the service works than myself. I cannot ride that pony with you. I cannot. All right? It just does not fit. I want every finance officer to know that understanding the system as I do, I hold you in no contempt or disregard in respect of this matter. I want every Treasury officer to know that in respect of this matter, I hold you in no contempt or disregard, because I understand perhaps that in an eagerness to do something, you may have missed a process. You may have. But I see no malfeasance. I see no skullduggery. I see nothing untoward having been done as far as my understanding and office work is. I'm sorry, I do not. Some training, some adjusted procedures, I can see some of that may be necessary. But the way this has been cast, first of all, if you're going to have something as material as this be revealed, I would dare say, how would you make that disclosure to the Parliament of the Bahamas as a communication? And in the process, speak to how the matter is going to be, or is being addressed. Because if in point of fact, the cabinet approved, let me come back from the break and help you out with that. We'll be back after this break. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shafago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever.
History has taught us that in crisis, humanity will always respond with innovation. What world-changing technologies will emerge from humanity's latest challenges? How can the Caribbean capitalize on the metaverse, blockchain, hybrid work, and more? Join us at the RF Conference under the theme Future Forces, World-Changing Ideas, where we will explore the future and more. The journey begins on June 8th. Reserve your seat today at www.rfeoc.com.
Stand on Bahamas, it's your boy, Sawyer Boy. COVID is clearly unpredictable. It doesn't matter how young you are, how old you are. I'm young, and it still put a beating on me. I had no other option for it. I remember the doctor telling me if I had waited one more day, I wasn't going to come inside your life. You don't want to be in the same position that I was in. Vaccines may not stop you from getting COVID, but it can stop you from getting COVID the way I had COVID. You don't want that way.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live, I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us at 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Talking about the disclosure by Minister Pierre Lovarole about a $4 million overpayment by finance officers, apparently to themselves, according to the minister. We do have some text here. Let me read them for you. This text says, good day, Mr. Lang. Why do you always need foreigners to do what Bahamians can do? I respect, in respect of reverse osmosis or desalination. Well, I'm not going to take too much time with that, but what the foreigner is doing. If you want to do desalination, my friend, as a Bahamian, you can do it. You have the money. You invest millions of dollars in establishing a desalination, and then you can go ahead and do your own desalination business. The foreigner came here, did the investment. Now Bahamians are owners in the investment because it's a publicly traded company. Don't blame the foreigner. You want to do desalination business? Go ahead. Get up and running, bro. It's Texas, Chicago. I being in the public service for over 39 years and just get a promotion before the government change and just what was the promotion, senior attendant. This kind of thing, what is happening in the system. I just signed my ACR today. When I read the report, I was senior attendant, but the back pay was 4 years up to this year, okay? This text says, finance officers, treasury officers, whomever, this is followed for thousands of other officers every day, every year, but in this case, this major step of assigning this correct pay scale was completely missed. First of all, you're wrong. Career paths are not established every day, every year in the public service. Does not happen every day, every year. It does not happen every day, every year. And during an election process where people are trying to get things done, not happen all the time. So stop that. I don't even know if this has ever happened before. Do you know that? Who told you that this has never happened before? Or maybe it's just that you never heard about this kind of thing happening before. I don't know. Do you know that? I don't know. So I'm sorry. I can't accept your assumption. I do accept the question as to missing the step and why. That is a question for the public, for the government of the Bahamas for sure. How did that happen and how do we correct it? And so that's a legitimate question that I would be shocked if they were not attending to even as we speak, right? I'd be shocked at that one, because you want to know. You don't want this to happen anymore. You want to correct that. It's Texas, Mr. Lang, is there an automatic raise when someone is promoted? No, there's not. No, that's not. When you're promoted, first of all, in order to be promoted, you have to have what is called establishment clearance, right? When you're hired or promoted, you have to have establishment clearance, meaning that there is in fact provision in the establishment for that particular promotion. And then there has to be financial clearance, meaning that there has to be money provided to provide the additional sums of money attendant to that promotion. So those two things have to happen before you can affect a promotion, okay? This text says, why is Kingsley Ferguson seem to be agitating for public officers to be paid their increase if in fact Minister Pierre Glover Road has indicated $4 million was already paid out without proper approval? I did ask that question myself. Was the money in fact paid? If they are saying pay the people the money, or is he suggesting that in light of the recovery that is supposed to be made, you'll be taking back money, and therefore he's saying pay the people their money, as in do not take back people the money? I don't know. It's a good question you raise. This text says, Minister Pierre Glover Road is a newbie, an immature minister, and she has conveyed her information misleadingly to the public, in my opinion, after Mr. Lang explained the procedure. You know, okay, Minister Glover Road is a new minister, first time to it. I was in 1997. Immature, I don't know, I could say that. I don't know what that means. She has a responsibility to carry out. I do believe that this will be a lesson for her. I made mistakes when I was a new minister. There's no question about it. And I was reprimanded for some mistakes I made when I was a minister by Mr. Ingemu, who said, you know, Shalag, you can't say that, can't do that, et cetera, right? So it's a lesson to be learned. It's not, you know, but things like this, I keep trying to say that new ministers have to recognize that there are some things you do not want to say publicly without first a fulsome support and approval of your cabinet and or your prime minister and or, if you're a minister of state, the portfolio minister. We notice that the minister responsible for that portfolio is the Honorable Fred Mitchell. Have you heard from him? Has anybody heard from him? You have not, right? And I would imagine that before I would have gone out there and said something so significant, I'm talking to my minister. I'm going to have a word with him. And I'm going to say, listen, sir, you know, this is what's happening, blah, blah, blah. What if I'm asked about it? What should I do? Blah, blah, blah. And get some guidance so that at the end of the day, you know, I suspect that he may still back up. But at the end of the day, when he follows, if somebody calls on him, then, you know, he provides and they speak the same message on it. So I don't, you know, I don't regard as immature. I don't know what that would mean. New, yes, but so what? So many. You know, Mr. Davis has never been prime minister before, so he's a newbie too. He's been deputy prime minister, but he's not been prime minister before, so he's a newbie. All right. Chester Cooper has never been a cabinet minister prior to now before. Has never been a deputy prime minister prior. He's a newbie too. So lots of newbies. I don't know that we can place anything at her feet because she's due. Texas IZ, excellent and very clear explanation of the procedure. I didn't think that the financial officers could adjust their salaries to the tune of $4 million as intimated by Minister Rule. These newbies need to understand the process and cease from casting aspersions on previous administration at every perceived opportunity. Even if there was some malfeasance, a sidebar with media is not the appropriate forum to address it. And I don't think that there was any malfeasance at all that was done. So, how do you address this? I was saying that this is an internal matter. And it would seem to me that as an intern, let me tell you something, okay? This is what happens at the crosshairs of politics. You have a change in administration, and I have no doubt that had it been the F&M administration, they may not have said in the same words, but they may have taken liberty to put this out there too as a way of knocking the former administration. So that happened. So I'm not anybody for that. I'm not going to criticize anybody for taking some umbrage with the politics of a moment for one action, that happens. This is the nature of the environment in which we operate in. But as a sheer organizational issue, right, you have an approval, right? The board approved the matter. It was executed in a way that you would not have done it. Let me show you all something. Y'all remember when the Progressive Liberal Party's administration under Mr. Christie gave a concession to Ginn in Grand Bahama, but the concession was not enshrined in law? There was no legal authority to do so? What happened in that instance? The government came to the parliament and retroactively passed a law to give effect to that approval. That has happened many times. The Ingram administration has done it. You go and spend government money. You didn't have authorization to do it. You come to the Parliament of the Bahamas and you pass a law, a supplemental, to give effect to the expenditure. That has happened. Okay? This is your organization. It wasn't as if people stole money. It wasn't as if people gave an increase that wasn't approved. They did so and in breach of a procedure. It's an internal matter. Why could you and why would you not sit down and have the discussions necessary and say, okay, here's how we deal with that. Let's go ahead, progression done, retroactively make whatever adjustments is essential in light of the progression, and then carry on. You can still go to the Parliament of the Bahamas and say, here's what we discovered. We did an audit, an internal audit. This was not an external audit. So this was not something done by an accounting firm or any external body. This is what the internal audit people in the government did. So this is the government discovering its own failed process. We found out that, that notwithstanding the cabinet had approved for this career path adjustment, the progression that should have been done by the public service in order to give effect to that approval through the Public Service Commission and then the Governor General was not followed. We therefore conducted the progression. We saw that an adjustment needed to be made because there was an overpayment in light of what was done. And we are therefore now giving effect to how to recover whatever overpayment may have been done, because it wasn't done with any malfeasance in mind. And we have now instituted this adjustment to ensure that that could never happen again. And we have proceeded with training for these particular persons so that they would know in the future how to proceed with matters such as these. And we therefore commend to you this new process. Now, that's the communication. Now, in a debate, when you feel like knocking them people across the head, you say, listen, you see how sloppily you all did this matter? This is not good. Blah, 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 blah. And you could take your licks like that. The arms of things, the organizational efficiency and effectiveness in management necessary, and then you give some political blows as you felt inclined to do at the same time. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take another break. We'll be back after this break. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand.
How
how important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
I ain't marched the car. The lady who run into me marched the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
A local paper in Grand Bahama is back every Tuesday as a section of the Nassau Guardian. Available at local stores, gas stations, pharmacies, Western Bakery, and Bellevue Gifts. Daily and, of course, on Tuesdays too. Want to reach your Grand Bahama audience? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578. Or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads, too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. So glad that you could join us. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Do you know what the implications are of a group of finance officers willing and wanting to steal from you, to corruptly manipulate your system? Do you know the implication? Are you all serious? Listen, all the $2.5 billion that you spend on an annual basis, which amounts to more than $20 billion over 10 years, all of that money passed through them people's hands. I mean processing, not the money itself, the cash. But it passes through them in terms of processing through the treasury. You know the implications are of them sitting down and doing that? It's too stark. It's too stark. I mean, so when I hear some things, I just go like, man, please. So I you know, there's some things like you just can't fathom, man. It just has to make sense. So you got to make it make sense. All right? This text says the question of why so many public servants at home needs to be put to minister role. This unfair practice needs to stop. The public treasury is being abused and the public sits back and do nothing. I'm sick of this system we've become accustomed to. How many public servants are home? I don't know. I mean, is that does anybody know? Are you saying that people have been sent home and are still being paid. I know that that happens. I know. I have seen instances of that. I remember public officer came to me and said, man, you know, Mr. Lang, this was way back then. Now, this is not now. So they got me inside the office and me in the conference room just doing nothing. I said, what should I do? I said, well, are you being paid? I said, yes. I said, have they not given you and directing you to do any work? No. I said, did you speak to anybody about it? Yes. And nothing has happened? No. I said, do you like to study? Say, what you mean? I said, yeah, do you have something you could study that could improve your skill set and what have you? He said, yeah. I said, well, study. You getting a free opportunity to study? And you know that person did that? And got a certification. What you could do if your boss won't pay you and send and keep you home? What you could do? Don't waste the time. That's all I can tell you. Upgrade yourself. Do something with it. Now, I know that you want to be working. I know that. But if you can't do anything about somebody sending you home, what should you take advantage of the opportunity and do something? Right now, you could kick up a fuss if you want. You could go tell the newspaper. You could do that. You could go and complain to the opposition. You could do that. So you could do any number of things, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's a judgment that you have to make. But I say, if somebody's gonna have me sit around at home and continue to pay me, okay. I mean, if I can't do anything to change the situation, then I make good use of the opportunity to be paid and at the same time upgrade my skills, because I cannot do work that's not assigned to me. And I'm not going to quit my job and lose my benefits if I am not the reason for my being in the position that I'm in. That has happened. Okay? How many such people there are? I don't know. You say so many. What is so many? 10? 100? 1,000? I don't know. So I don't know. You know? I could agree with you that it is something that if being done, ought not to be done. And unfortunately, we do have an element of partisan, significant partisan politics that comes into play in the way we conduct government affairs in the country. That's not just here, it's everywhere. I'm not saying that it makes it right. I'm just telling you, I live in the real world and I try not to pretend to live in a fake world. I'm not gonna sit around and go, child, well, you know, that doesn't, it happens. What can you do about it? Well, I don't know what you could do about it. If you FNM, PLP, DNA, and they decide and determine that they're gonna use partisan politics to organize themselves or do certain things, what can you do about it? Tell me, any of you. You could only do something about it in the next election. Or if you want, you could embarrass them. If you have the facts, you could go to the press and you could say, here's what's happening. I happen to know of this situation. So even a public officer who is in that situation, who may not themselves want to say so, they get the information to the opposition and the opposition could say, well, minister, can you explain X, Y, and Z? I'm advised, I'm told, it's been brought to my attention. So, you know, other than those kinds of things, you know, what is his name? Ray Charles sings a version of the, I can't remember who originally sang the song, Let It Be, Let It Be, Let It Be. Speaking words of wisdom. You just gotta let it be, because you can't do anything about it. So I hope today that by virtue of what I've said, that we understand a couple of things. First of all, we understand that finance officers cannot and could not independently adjust the government system to pay themselves an additional $4 million. Could not happen. Secondly, in order for finance officers to be paid, the treasurer would have had to authorize those payments, and payments by the treasury are made in accordance with documentation given authorization to that payment. In this instance, it seems that the treasury operated on an authorization based on cabinet approval, as opposed to what ordinarily would be the case in respect of a career path adjustment leading to a salary progression by the Ministry of Public Service, Department of Public Service, confirmed by the Public Service Commission, and then an order generated by the Governor General, that did not happen. And that is the breach that now has the service looking at itself to determine how this matter ought to be dealt with. Right? Ain't nobody going to jail. Ain't nobody was thiefing nobody money. Nobody was sitting down in some back room typing keys and saying, oh, Zhivago Lang now getting $2,800 a month. Ding, 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 ding. He will now get $3,500 a month. Sucky now. No. Nonsense. Didn't happen. Couldn't happen. Wouldn't happen. Any of the finance officers got together, and all of them was in the back room saying, now look at, listen, this is how we can do this, right? So you can get five. You can get five, and I can get five. And so listen, you go inside your system and plug it in. Boom. You go in your system and plug it in. And you, boy, if finance officers have the ability to do that, 25 cents a day, 300 tomorrow, over a lifetime, a career, man, they could pack the money inside the bank. But it can't happen. It did not happen. And we ought not to suggest that any such thing happened. Okay? So now, do I think that the minister, in conveying what she conveyed, was being deceptive? Absolutely not. Not at all. Do I think that the minister, in conveying what she conveyed, perhaps gave an unfortunate impression? Yeah. It's clearly, yeah. Do I think that there could have been a different way to reveal all of this? Yes, of course. And the proper way for me, in my mind, would have been by way of a communication following upon the whole thing being addressed. Because remember, the minister said that the Ministry of Finance and the public service were both now gathering together to try and address the matter. And that is as it should be. Tech says, great advice. Thank you. Yeah. Anyway. So, y'all have a great evening. God bless. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Life. Y'all be good. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Zhivago Lang, your host. Take care.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody.
Z Tea Live Off the Record with Shivago Lang is sponsored by Advantage Insurance, the Cleveland Clinic, Fidelity Bank Bahamas, the Fincastle Media Group, RF Bank and Trust, Royal Star Assurance, and Scotiabank.
Take a stand, take a stand.